You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. Keep hope alive. We're doing it every day from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on this program. Remember, you can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you miss our live broadcasts, you can find those at civicmedia.us/shows, of course, on Apple Pods as well as Spotify. And tell all of your friends in the southeastern Wisconsin area, we've got a brand new Big FM channel, 100.3 FM. You can hear us clear as a bell. So join us every Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. because we get to talk to incredibly unheralded heroes and thinkers and researchers like the gentleman that is my very next guest. Now, I am happy to report that he is no longer unheralded. He is one of Wisconsin's two MacArthur Grant Foundation award recipients this year. His name is Angel Adames Korolitsa. I hope I got that mostly right. He is the UW-Madison Associate Professor and Chair of the Climatology, Atmospheric, and Ocean Sciences. That is the Ned P. Smith Distinguished Chair. Want to give those donors their due who established the endowed chairs. Congratulations, Angel, and welcome to the show. I'm so extremely happy for you. Quite an honor you've received.
Thank you. It feels like I've been transported to a completely different dimension, but it's a great pleasure to be here.
It's a good dimension to be in. Folks, if you're unfamiliar with the MacArthur Foundation, they give these fellowships out every year. They go to writers and artists, social scientists, hard scientists, teachers, business owners, entrepreneurs, a whole wide range of folks. And to be considered for this, you're nominated anonymously, which is, I understand it, you get a random phone call, and sometimes they even have to like engage in a little cloak and dagger to get people to pick up these calls so that the MacArthur Foundation folks can be like, you just got a great big fellowship to help you study what is your life's work. How did they let you know about your award? And did you have any idea that this was happening?
No idea that this was happening. I was definitely one of those cloak and dagger people. I was tricked. I got an email from them that they wanted to talk to me about tropical weather and climate because of some stuff that they were doing. And so I had no idea what was going on. I told my partner, I got like nervous because I was like, oh, it's the MacArthur Foundation. You know, they must be doing something serious. But I didn't think that I was going to be a fellow. And it's funny, my partner told me, it's like, oh, they should just give you money. You know, and I was like, oh, but I just don't think that's what's going to happen. I think that they're just doing some kind of nonprofit thing and just want to talk to me. But it turned out when I got the phone call that they were going to give me the fellowship and I was coming with money. And I was like, what? And my brain melted. I don't remember anything else, to be honest with you.
What an incredibly amazing phone call to get. These fellowships are $800,000. It is no strings attached money. It is given to these folks. Again, there's this major anonymous nomination process. They go through all of these panels of review, and it's basically to help people, again, pursue their life's work in these given fields. And again, you have to be extraordinarily talented. You have to have creativity. It is really an acknowledgement of not just your work to date, but your potential as a major contributor to basically, and I don't mean to sound too metaphoric about this, to human understanding and collective knowledge. So again, Angel, like congratulations from the bottom of my heart. I was so thrilled to see that two Wisconsin researchers got the grant this year.
Yeah, it's been crazy. And I understand that I think University of Wisconsin is the only institution that got to this year. So yeah, props to us. We're great.
Quite an honor. The University of Wisconsin, Madison, my alma mater, it's an R1 research institution. It is so well known for so many areas of study. And it really, it's a credit to everyone who calls themselves a Wisconsinite. Thank you for pointing out the fact that UW-Madison stood alone in this grant award cycle as a university that had two recipients. Tell folks a little bit about what your area of expertise is and what you have been researching and studying.
Yeah, so in short, I am a tropical meteorologist. I study the weather and climate of the tropical latitudes. And I'm actually one of maybe a handful of scientists who does theory observations and also looks at model output. So I do a lot of the math and physics of trying to understand what drives tropical weather patterns, everything from the clouds all the way to the planetary scale. You name it, I probably looked at it.
Well, and the interesting thing here is, you know, I was reading recently, and I'm going to just specifically talk about weather forecasting for a moment. We're going to bring it back to your area of study in a moment. You know, weather folks get this tongue-in-cheek, they get it right, maybe they get it right half the time. Turns out, at least in the before times, weather forecasters got it right about 80% of the time, which I think is really key. And in this age of climate change, where we're seeing weather patterns and climate-related events, natural disasters, things that folks have to prepare for, happening much more frequently and with much greater acuity, researchers like yourselves, as well as the meteorology, are really hand in hand to try to help people not be caught off guard by these things. And I wanted to just briefly ask you, how impactful is one of these MacArthur Genius Grants for a researcher like yourself? This administration has been ruthless in basically attacking research as well as federal grants that help fund research in our institutions of higher education, both private and public. This must be a life changer in terms of what you can pursue in your given area of expertise.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think in different times, this would have been like, it still is a shock, right? But like, I think in previous times, like it would have been somewhat different in that, like it would have opened to a lot of new windows for things. But the reality is that in the current era that we're in, before I got the call, my plans were to just cut back on my research because the funding isn't there. I hadn't gotten any grants removed. I've known other people that have, but I didn't see the point in applying for grants when you know that the money is not going to be there, or that they were just going to find a way to like not give it to you anyways. And so I was planning on rolling back and kind of going into like hibernation mode. And so now I get to stand privileged amongst many of my colleagues because I can actually continue doing the research because I now got the MacArthur Fellowship. But the reality for the majority of weather and climate scientists is that the amount of money is getting cut back. You know, I mean, you can always hope that things are going to change and it won't be as bad, but it looks bad, you know, and it's been bad. And now I can explore. I still am thinking of exploring new ideas, but the plan was to cut back, and now I'm not going to cut back, and that's really what's going to happen.
Thank goodness for that. I'm so happy to hear that for you. But I remain extraordinarily worried for us, literally all of us, because this is the type of, again, innovation, ingenuity, the creativity, moving into new areas, expanding knowledge base, expanding those research areas that are basically now in peril. And folks, if you're just joining us, let me just reset a bit. We're with one of the University of Wisconsin-Madison's two MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipients for this year. It is given to people who have both established themselves in their life's work, but also show incredible promise and creativity for future developments. It is a life-changing amount of money. It is no strings attached. It lets people do what they do best in various areas of study. His name is Professor Angel Adames Koralitza. Again, he's an associate professor at UW-Madison focusing on climatology. You mentioned something that I thought was really interesting. I don't think many people understand the mathematics, the physics that go into an area of study like yours, as well as just basic meteorology and forecasting. It is all math. It is all very complex models. Tell us a little bit about that in as much of layperson approachable terms, and how this helps us understand and prepare for the impacts of climate change, weather readiness, the applications that actually impact folks' lives.
Yeah, so let's talk about like the weather forecasting models, right? Because I think that's the stuff that's more tangible to people.
Yes.
Because that's the stuff that you look at your phone, you get up, you look at the forecast, right? So forecasts are actually made by what we call weather forecasting models. They're like computer code. And they're usually run on the world's most powerful computers. Like, it takes that much power to run a weather forecast model because the planet is incredibly complex. Clouds are incredibly complex. Winds, pressure, all these things are complicated. They're interacting with each other. So it takes a ton of computer power in order to create a weather forecast. Same with a climate forecast. So all these models that are trying to tell us how our climate is changing, they're run in our strongest, most powerful computing systems on Earth. So what I do is that I try to extract what are like the basic processes that might control certain phenomena, for example. So how can we distill this to the most basic things so they can inform us as to what things are important so they can go back to the community, educate the community so they know what are the patterns that they should be looking out for, but also talk with the people who are running the models and doing the code building so we can get ideas on how to improve forecasts or improve climate projections.
One way to put this, and Angel, correct me if I am wrong, is you are one of the scientists and data scientists and physicists that help build the AI models so that the AI model is better. I think people think of AI as this like thing that exists, but you have to build it and you have to train it so that it produces robust outcomes. Your work helps feed that, helps us build those better AI models that helps all of us look at our phone and know whether it's going to rain or snow tomorrow. Is that too dumbed down? I don't want to do your work any disrespect. You are a MacArthur genius after all.
No, so actually, so the AI stuff is all new, right? It's been the
yes.
latest revolution in numerical weather prediction. It's way faster than the numerical models that take like enormous computer power that I was like talking about. These are things that can run extremely fast and efficiently, but they need to get trained with data. And so the stuff that I study, and I was actually at a conference earlier this year in Thailand because people in Southeast Asia are trying to build their own AI model, and they want to know what to train their AI models on. So they're bringing the people who kind of study the physical processes and be like, these are the key variables. You know, these are the key fields that you want to look at to maximize, you know, getting the most out of your training, for example. So even though I don't do any AI myself, I interact with the people who do the forecasting and help them understand what are the things that they should be looking at most carefully.
It's such incredibly important work. We're going to review some most recent headlines. We're also going to review what one of South Florida's most beloved meteorologists said just a few months ago about whether or not his viewers can continue to rely on his weather forecasts and why it remains important for all of us to encourage our federal government to fund researchers like my special guest, Professor Angel Adames Koralitza of the UW-Madison Climate Department, and again, MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipient. Don't go anywhere. Our conversation continues on the other side.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Boy, my Tuesday is flying by. I love talking to smart people. We have got a literal genius with us for the rest of this half hour. His name is Professor Angel Adames Koralitza. He's with the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is their Ned P. Smith Distinguished Chair of Climatology, Atmospheric and Ocean Studies. As I noted, he is one of UW-Madison's two MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipients for this year. I will begin again with my congratulations to you, Angel. And before the break, I promised our listeners that I would just review a handful of headlines just from October that are talking about impacts of climate. This is from the AP, October 14th. Rare October storm in Southern California prompts evacuations and causes freeway accidents. October 15th, also at the AP. La Nina conditions observed in the Pacific. It could cause a snowy winter in the Midwest. The Guardian, October 16th. Carbon dioxide from wildfires increases by 9% as climate change supercharges infernos. WAPO on October 16th, one of Alaska's biggest air shifts is now underway after massive storm. I talked about that yesterday a bit. Houston Chronicle, October 16th, cold front arrives in Houston on Tuesday. Here's how far temperatures could drop. And the UN agency says CO2 levels hit record high last year, causing more extreme weather. Wanted to play a brief clip of one of South Florida's most beloved meteorologists who's been on the TV for 34 years. This is a guy that everybody knows. They would recognize him on the street. They trust him. Listen to what this guy said about this administration's cut to research, cuts to NOAA, and basically attack on science.
As you've grown accustomed to my presentations over my 34 years in South Florida newscasts, confidently, I went on TV and I told you, it's going to turn. You don't need to worry. It is going to turn. And I am here to tell you that I am not sure I can do that this year because of the cuts, the gutting, the sledgehammer attack on science in general, and I could talk about that for a long, long time, and how that is affecting the U.S. Leadership in science over many years, and how we're losing that leadership, and this is a multi-generational impact on science in this country, all right? But specifically, let's talk about the federal government cuts to the National Weather Service and to NOAA. Did you know that Central and South Florida National Weather Service offices are currently basically 20 to 40% understaffed. From Tampa to Key West, including the Miami office, 20 to 40% understaffed. Now, this type of staffing shortage is having impacts across the nation because there's been a nearly 20% reduction in weather balloon releases, launches, that carry those radio sons. And what we're starting to see is that the quality of the forecasts is becoming degraded.
We're going to post a longer clip of that in our show notes for today so people can look at it. Angel, if you will you explain to people what's going on with the weather balloons, if you don't mind? And secondly, that there is actually an international consortium of what I'm going to call weather and climate scientists that work together on these massive forecasting models. Tell us a little bit about how all this works.
Yeah, so the cuts of the weather balloons, so the weather balloons are made with hydrogen and they're with latex, and they have all these instruments called the radiosondes. They're actually quite pricey. So you have to have a decent budget in order to access them. So getting funds cut for them means that you can't actually send as many. And they're essentially the backbone of our weather forecast models because they're the observations that go into our weather forecasting model. So they're like the ground truth. We also use satellite data. The satellite data is the biggest amount of data that we have, but we calibrate our satellite data with radiosondes observations too. So losing that is a big loss. The speaker didn't talk about the potentially even bigger problem that we're gonna start losing our satellite constellations, which is the backbone, again, like I said, also the backbone of weather forecasting. And there's no plans to replace a lot of these satellites either.
It's so shocking to me. It's just the absence of the information. I've bemoaned the fact that we still talk about 100-year and 1,000-year floods based on data and modeling from the 70s, that those words don't have any meaning anymore. This is sort of like the latest iteration. We've got about 2 minutes left on Helen. If you're just joining us, we're with one of Wisconsin's two MacArthur Genius Grant Award recipients. He is Associate Professor Angel Adames Koralitza out of UW-Madison. Talk to the people out there. Tell them why what you do and what scientists do writ large is so important to public health, safety, and wellness overall in every state of the union.
I mean, what I do is just learn, right? And write what we learn and send it out you know, our money is using taxpayer, you know, we pay with using taxpayer money. You know, everybody deserves knowledge, you know, like it shouldn't be something that's prevented from being part of everybody's knowledge base. What I try to do is to communicate what I know, what I understand, and use that knowledge to improve weather and climate forecasts. So ultimately, I don't have an agenda, right? Like my agenda is to do my work, and the outcome of my work is to improve people's lives, you know? So that's what it is. We try to make people's lives better by doing research.
Yeah, we make people's lives better by following research, by doing good research, by doing good objective science. That is how we make, whether it's forecasting models or flood risk reduction, floodplain models, robust and vigorous. And that benefits us all. That's why we need federal dollars supporting them. But Angel, personally, I am so glad and so proud to be from the state where you do your research, and so proud and happy for you that you are indeed a genius. I would love to have you back. We can talk about academia. We can talk more about your research, but congratulations to you, friend.
Oh, yeah. Happy to chat anytime. Just feel free to contact me once again. It's been a great pleasure.
Wonderful. When we come back, folks, I'm going to dig into Donald Trump not really giving a whit about farmers, but $20 billion, maybe $40 billion for Argentina. Make it make sense. Keep listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're rejoining me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I so love talking to nerds, and I mean that with a lot of love and respect. Big, big thank you to the professor from UW-Madison, who was just a recipient of their MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant. Angel Adames Corraliza, thank you so much for making us all a little bit smarter. Suffice it to say, it should be a nonpartisan thing to fund good research at the university level. It should be a nonpartisan thing that you can't use the IRS to target your political enemies. It should be a nonpartisan thing that we probably should be spending more money studying climate and meteorology and not less. But, you know, so much for common sense. Listen, Donald Trump, in his campaign and in his inaugural address, constantly uses this phrase, this claim that he puts America first. He said this in his second inaugural address back in January. During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first. That's not true. What he should have said is, I will put myself and my interests first, and I will break my oath to uphold and defend the Constitution every day. That would have been more accurate, but that's what he said. And so when you talk to small business owners and farmers about what the Donald Trump tariff, terror, taco nonsense is doing to them, it's not good. And farmers don't want bailouts. They just want to sell their crops. So the Trump administration has just pledged $20 billion U.S. taxpayer dollars, in other words, reached into your pocket, took some of the money that you made, and is now just giving it to Argentina. We can get into the whys in a moment, but I wanted to take a breath because, again, here's what he said. During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first. So a reporter on Air Force One asked him about that and the $20 billion boondoggle giveaway to Argentina. And listen to how he responds.
Question is, what do you have to say to U.S. farmers who feel that the deal is benefiting Argentina more than it is them,
Argentina's fighting for its life, young lady. You don't know anything about it. They're fighting for their life. Nothing's benefiting Argentina. They're fighting for their life. You understand what that means? They have no money. They have no anything. They're fighting so hard to survive. If I can help them survive in a free world, I happen to like the president of Argentina. I think he's trying to do the best he can. But don't make it sound like they're doing great. They are dying. All right? They're dying.
Young lady, You don't know anything about it. I'm trying to save them. I like their president. By the way, their president is kind of like a wannabe Trump. The next time some conservative calls me up on the horn and starts deflecting or disrespecting or disinforming, I'm going to be like, young man, because they're always men. Young man, you don't know anything about it. And see how that lands. If I can't say that to a caller, why does the president of the United States get to address a reporter who's asking a completely legitimate question that way? And make note, it's always I. And in addition, I think there might be a few other countries, Ukraine, where people are dying and fighting for their lives. If that's the decision rule, where are the Tomahawk missiles, Mr. President? Where's the massive aid package to Ukraine? It has nothing to do with the plight of Argentinians. It has everything to do with billionaire hedge funds who got over-levered into Argentina and now are standing to lose billions there unless the U.S. comes and props up the Argentinian currency. That's what it's about. It is only and ever about the freaking money and the billionaires. So he's taking out of your pocket to prop up the Argentinian currency to benefit the billionaire bro club. That's what's going on here. By the way, again, this is according to reporting by the New York Times. Last week, when Mr. Trump met with Javier Milei, the president of Argentina, to discuss the financial package that the Treasury Department has proposed, the president sounded a different tune. Just helping a great philosophy take over a great country, Trump said. Should we parse that a wee bit together, shall we? Just helping a great philosophy take over a great country. What great philosophy is this? Oh, by the way, this guy, Javier Milei, he's a Trump ally and a very, very, very far right, kind of alt-right conservative. So let's get this straight. I'm helping an alt-right Argentinian conservative birthed in my own image, quote, take over. It's weird what comes flying out of his mouth, isn't it? Like, oh gosh, he doesn't mean take over. There's supposed to be a debate. Yes, he means take over, because guess what he's doing here, folks? Taking over, violating the Constitution every day. Take over a great country. Then he went on to this insightful, like uber intelligent breakdown of the delicate economic situation that's been plaguing Argentina for what? Oh, by the way, decades. Argentina is one of the most beautiful countries that I've ever seen. And we want to see it succeed. Very simple. Very simple. It's my beautiful country. Again, if this is the decision line or the decision rule, there's beautiful countries all over the place. Note what he's not talking about. He's not talking about what's wrong with the peso. The day after this meeting, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent doubled down on the administration's commitment to Argentina, which is heavily indebted, perennially troubled. This has been going on with the Argentinian peso, again, for decades. It goes back to the time that I was in graduate school in the late 90s. And why would we care about the Argentinian peso? To put this in perspective, the U.S. exported a measly $16.5 billion worth of goods and services to Argentina. We're just going to give them $20 billion. They can just buy our goods back from us. We'll just give them 20 bills. That's fine. $16.5 billion exported to Argentina last year, compared to $384 billion with Mexico and $80 billion with Brazil. And then Scott Bessent says, actually, he's cooking up an additional $20 billion, so $40 billion to Argentina. But this one is supposed to be financed by banks and investment funds rather than the U.S. taxpayer. But I want to just throw this out there for some debate and thinking. Banks and investment funds don't give money away for nothing. So, like, what's the collateral? Are they buying an interest in the Argentinian government? Are they buying pesos? Well, what happens if the peso continues in its free fall and inflation explodes and then, you know, goods disappear and there's bread lines and sort of riots in Argentina? How are they? Like, again, I don't know banks and investment funds, read hedge funds, to just give away billions of dollars. They usually want something in return. So I wonder if the U.S. banks and hedge funds' additional $20 billion in investment, air quotes, I don't know what they're investing in, announced by Treasury Secretary Bessent, I wonder if that goes completely south. In other words, it blows up, it doesn't start the stop the Argentinian peso's free fall. I wonder if the Trump administration might again help out the billionaire boys club. I'm just asking questions here. By the way, the president of Argentina has appeared at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, like their big annual jamboree. This is the guy that gave the chainsaw to billionaire bro of billionaire bros, Elon Musk. It's this guy. By the way, I think Elon Musk and Sean Duffy, the transportation secretary, are not on good terms, not going well. Elon Musk, I think, just called him Sean Dummy instead of his name, Sean Duffy, just as a little aside. Here are some of the policies of the president of Argentina that ultimately has led their economy into a death spiral. See if any of this sounds familiar. Massive spending cuts across Argentina's federal government, slashing public pensions, firing thousands of public sector workers, slashing programs that help folks in poverty or in need. Does any of that sound at all vaguely familiar? I don't know how to emphasize how incredibly foolhardy and stupid this is. And lest any conservative get on the phone and call me up about the investment that the Clinton administration made in Argentina back in 1995. Not in Argentina. It was to Mexico in 1995. It's because of the trading relationship with Mexico. It also went through a whole vetting process through the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Very different. It also involved the IMF, which is the International Monetary Fund, back in 1995. Very different. Here's what the former chief economist at the IMF said about this boondoggle, this billionaire boys club giveaway funded by U.S. taxpayers that's ostensibly about helping this beautiful country, Argentina, whether it's $20 billion, maybe it's $40 billion. Here's what he said, quote, "What's worrisome here is that Trump and Bessette are repeatedly saying that we will be there in Argentina for the long term and we will do whatever it takes." He is effectively saying to foreign investors, you will be able to get out whole. That means it's really $40 billion that U.S. taxpayers are on the hook for. What an abomination. I've saved the best for last. We got a little shutdown update coming up next. Don't go anywhere. We'll take your calls as well. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Also, Argentina, that's where all the Nazis went after World War II. Just saying. Stay tuned, everybody.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. We have reached the last segment of this Tuesday show. Boy, time flies when I'm hanging out with each and every one of you. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. One last, excuse me, little tidbit about the Argentina problem. So the $20 or $40 billion that we're giving Argentina, here's what reporting from the Wall Street Journal says. That's welcome news for American hedge funds that have been investing in Argentinian assets. One such hedge fund is Discovery Capital Management, founded by Robert Citrone. Okay, so keep in mind, Discovery Capital Management, Robert Citrone. At the end of last month, it was pointed out by a financial journalist that Citrone used to work with whom? Scott Bessent. Ah, yes. Back for years, starting in 2013. And whom did they both work for? George Soros, the boogeyman of conservative nightmares. After that reporting from this financial journalist about Scott Bessent's working relationship with Citrone, the guy that owns one of these major hedge funds that has taken this massive position in Argentina that Trump is now giving 20 or maybe 40 billion of taxpayer funds to help prop up a peso, even though Argentina only imports less than $20 billion in U.S. goods every year. But maybe it's because the guy is like a mini Trump in Argentina. Oh, and maybe because all of the Trump-style policies that that president put in place in Argentina did what? Crushed the middle class and tanked their economy, and now the Argentinian peso is in free fall? Okay, after all that came out, the New York Times then reported that Citrone was, quote, in close contact with Treasury Secretary Bessent in the lead-up to the Treasury announcement of the $20 billion taxpayer-funded bailout to Argentina when it was announced last month. So, you know, they were talking a little. I wonder what they were talking about. And again, I can't believe I'm saying this. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene got this one right. She's been posting on X. Americans are getting decimated with the high cost of living and skyrocketing insurance costs. Many of them have zero savings and some are maxing out credit cards to survive. Tell me how it's America first to bail out a foreign country with 20 or even 40 billion in taxpayer dollars. Pretty good question, Marjorie. Just saying. Troy from Mount Horeb, how you doing, friend? Welcome to the show. What you got for us?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good, friend.
Good, good. So the Kansas City Star wrote an article, Kansas, Missouri farmers went big for Trump as tariffs are cutting them. So a friend of mine posted that on Facebook, and a friend of hers, as a farmer, I can tell you that it's categorically false. Commodity prices are nothing special, but there are no farmers out there blaming tariffs. And I said to him, well, they should blame the blaming the tariffs. And he said to me, no, sir, farmers are doing better right now than the majority of Biden's 4 years. Don't open your mouth about something you know nothing about. So
this is a farmer
up in El Dorado. So
yeah, it's amazing to me. Thanks, Troy. We've got sounds of farmers saying exactly the opposite. The collective delusion, right, that reinforces itself every day, that I can't get through when I talk to conservatives or when I try to text with them and I'm being specific about things and they're like, but Biden and the border, blah, blah, blah. If we can't actually look at the fact that soybeans are not being exported and talk about reality with farmers, if we can't talk about the facts, we can't talk about or at least say together, yes, these are the facts. Now let's argue about what to do about them. Or maybe try to start with our values and what we want the world to look like, and then deal with the facts, and then have an argument about the hows. It's the delusion has permeated the ability to be able to have any meaningful political discourse. Again, I talked about this yesterday. It's why when I have debates with conservatives, they bounce from subject to subject. It's a litany of sort of grievances and things. But what about, but what? It's all whataboutism. And you just, we can't break through that right now. So a farmer who is objectively, by any fact-based metric, doing worse now than they were during the Biden administration, especially the last 2 years, and by the way, Biden was cleaning up the Donald Trump COVID mess and the inflation mess. By the way, inflation peaked in, I believe it was June of Biden's first year on the job. Tell me whose inflation that is. Can't break through the delusion cycle. I'm not sure what to do about it except trying to get on the air with you folks every day and talk some facts. And here's the fact that we always need to remember. There's only one guy, one individual that is responsible for the shutdown, and it's this guy.
Who's going to bear the brunt of the responsibility if indeed there is a shutdown of our government?
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top, and they have to get solved from the top. And the president's the leader, and he's got to get everybody in a room, and he's got to lead. You know, the interesting thing is in 25 years and 50 years and 100 years from now, when the government is, you know, they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States.
Of course they will, because according to Donald Trump himself, that's who is responsible. You got to come to the table. You got to bring the people together. You got to negotiate. You got to actually have a negotiation. It's hard to negotiate when you're in the middle of a delusion. Just saying. That's going to do it for me, folks. Stay tuned. We got a little Pete Schwabba Nightlight coming up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together for the facts.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.